This is KRCU's Going Public, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Infant mortality in Missouri's six Boot Hill counties has been an ongoing problem. Recent data shows these counties have some of the highest infant mortality rates in the state. Kelly Clark, lead case manager at the Missouri Boot Hill Regional Consortium, Rob Turner, project management coordinator and interim executive director for Boot Hill Babies and Families, and Alicia Atkins, the data manager at Boot Hill Babies and Families, join me to talk about the reason behind these high numbers and new efforts to tackle it. Talisha, I want to ask you, infant mortality affects many communities nationwide. In Missouri, the rate is high in the St. Louis area as well as in the Boot Hill in southeast Missouri. Why is infant mortality in the Boot Hill such a problem?
So infant mortality in the Boot Hill is a problem because most of our babies are dying of unsafe sleep practices. So that's what we're tackling as our first focus area is unsafe sleep. And we want people to promote safe sleep by not co-sleeping, bed sharing, or even having the baby sleep in the bed by themselves. They need to be in a crib, a baby bassinet, pack and play, bassinet, anything but the bed with the parents or grandparents.
Safe sleeping, co-sleeping. Co-sleeping is something that has in some ways been somewhat generational and cultural. Can we expand on that? Maybe you, Kelly, kind of talk about like why those things are cultural or generational as far as sleeping habits and sleeping with your children.
Of course, co-sleeping has always been an issue. Many parents listen to their moms who co-sleep. Their mom listens to their mom who also co-sleep, and it was never an issue. Now it's becoming more of an issue, and it's just hard to reteach habits that they grew up with. They're going to listen to their mom and trust their mom more than they would trust a stranger. So
what are the recommendations as far as sleeping is concerned? Should they be on their back, their sides? How does that work? Should they sleep with a blanket, stuffed animals? What's the process?
So what we tell everyone is to follow what we call our ABCs of safe sleep. And the ABCs are alone, so the baby should be sleeping in a crib alone, on its back, not on its stomach. We know that previously a lot of people would put their babies to sleep on their stomach, but they've done a lot of research since then that gives us a new look at it, and it says that we should have the babies on their back. And then the C of safe sleep is in a crib or some other safe sleep surface. And kind of like Talisha said earlier, that a safe sleep surface could include a baby boxinette or a pack and play or crib, anything like that. And there shouldn't be anything in the crib. So that's part of that alone thing. So tight fitted, you know, bedding is best. And then you want to keep out stuffed animals and crib bumpers and anything that you think might be a hazard and could cause suffocation.
So with that being said, it's not always just the parents that end up falling asleep on their child or rolling over. Right. Sometimes it's their guardians, the grandparents. Mm-hmm. Are there conversations in the works with those types of guardians who may not be aware with your organization to make them more aware that, you know, it's a little bit dangerous?
Yeah, most definitely. One of the really cool things that we're doing as a Boot Hill Babies staff and also our steering committee members is we're going out into the community and performing these listening sessions. So what happens in the listening session is you have exactly conversations just like that. You're asking them, you know, sometimes there's going to be grandparents there. Sometimes you'll have other caregivers. We've had one listening session where it was mainly just fathers. And so we get to ask consistent questions to different groups of individuals and try and get a catch-all. One of the really cool things that happened recently was KFVS 12 actually posted some sort of poll, and the question was, is co-sleeping safe, yes or no? And so you would go and you would vote by selecting one of the reactions. And so what I saw yesterday on that poll was that I think when I checked it, it was 209 folks said that safe or co-sleeping is safe, and only 109 said co-sleeping is not safe. And then we had maybe 5 to 10 individuals who said that they were unsure. And so what that tells us, things like that that are already going on, people are already asking those questions. When we tap into that information, that tells us that we need to go a lot harder in this area, and we need to be pushing the ABCs of safe sleep a lot more, because there are individuals out there who, you know, assume that co-sleeping is what we call natural, or that that's the right answer because my mom did it or my grandma did it. That was a lot of the comments on the Facebook, was that, well, I slept with all of my children and they're all alive. And, you know, there's exceptions to every rule. But what we know is what the data says, and the data is explicit in saying that babies should be sleeping separate because of, you know, different hazards.
Now, we've been talking a little bit about that baby box net program as a way to reduce infant mortality in the region. And it's a grant-funded program initiative from the Missouri Foundation for Health. And for those who aren't aware of this initiative, it's a collaboration between Missouri Delta Medical Center in Sikeston, Twin Rivers Medical Center in Kennett, St. Francis Medical Center in Cape Girardeau, and Boot Hill Babies and Families. And the idea is to provide mothers with newborns living in the six Boot Hill counties baby boxinets to encourage safe sleeping habits. It's been a few months since we last spoke, and that program has expanded. Tell me a little bit more about that. New partnerships, what's going on? How has it been working out in the communities that have been served?
Yeah, so actually what's happening is that there are two different branches of the program, and they both are run by partners of Boot Hill Babies and Families. You have Missouri Foundation for Health, who funded the baby boxes for distribution through St. Francis Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Home State Health is who provided the boxes for Missouri Boot Hill Regional Consortium. And which program has expanded is the Missouri Regional Boot Hill Consortium program. And so initially, MBRC was working only with Southeast Hospital and then the health departments to ensure that each mom that lived within a Boot Hill zip code received a baby box. Well, since then, that partnership has expanded. And so now MBRC is working with Twin Rivers and
St. Francis.
And is it Mo Delta?
Mo Delta.
And Mo Delta. So now you have a wider range of coverage, you know, for all of those moms. And no matter where you deliver, you're going to get a box.
And regardless of race, income, anything, everyone gets a box, because we want people to be aware that safe sleep is important. So if you take your baby to grandma's house, where would the baby sleep if grandma doesn't have a crib or a bassinet? You could always transport that box and the baby would still have a safe place to sleep.
And so how old or how long are they supposed to be in those boxinets? Because, I mean, they are basically cardboard and they can't stay in there forever.
Right.
It's recommended up to 16 pounds and not over.
Okay.
And as long as the baby is not pulling up on the box, the child should be safe in the box. As long as the child is under, like Talisha said, 16 pounds.
Now, you might have a 10-pound baby that's real strong, a little Hulk baby or something like that that's popping up out of the baby box. But chances are, as long as they're under that weight cutoff, that they won't have the capability to pull themselves out of the box or flip the box over. So,
and we also do pre and post test with all of the parents that we deliver the boxes to. There's a curriculum that we go over to make sure they fully understand the rules of the box and how to properly lay their child to bed safely.
Also with the curriculum, there's also Baby Box University, where they can go on and they could see people from our area talking about the baby box and how to lay the baby in the box safely and different questions that's asked.
There are some intersections with infant mortality. We spoke about a little bit about safe sleeping habits and that being one intersection, but substance use in the home by parents could lead to infant mortality as well. How is that, and why is that an issue in the Boot Hill? Is that something that you're finding?
Well, we are actually looking into the substance use and misuse and how that does affect. Because right now, what I'm finding in my data is babies are dying of unsafe sleep practices because they're co-sharing, or in last year's instance, there was one wedging. Well, we don't know if that parent was high, drunk. We really don't know unless they're actually charged, and that's the cause of death. So right now it's just showing that the cause of death is how the baby died. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to figure out how we can input substance use and misuse into this safe sleep.
I know with MBRC, we deal with a lot of clients that have mental disabilities as well. And it kind of correlates with substance abuse as well. And when we go into the home, we assess the home and we work with those parents that may have mental issues, try to get them help. If we find out that they do have substance abuse problems, we get them into counseling to try to help with those issues, all while teaching on safe sleep in the home.
Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on infant mortality in the boot heel after the break.
Hi, I'm Ari Shapiro. Love what you hear on your car radio, but don't love your car anymore? Well, donate it to us. Your car can be turned into the programs you love. Here's how.
Visit KRCU.org and click on support for all the details.
We're back with KRCU's Going Public, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Before the break, my guests Kelly Clark, Rob Turner, and Talisha Atkins were talking with me about the intersectionality of substance use in the home with infant mortality. Here's more.
What kind of resources? So you said get counseling, but are they put into like rehab? Are the children taken out of that situation momentarily until the parents get it together? Like what happens?
Each incident is going to be case by case. So I can give you some examples of things that I know that have happened. In some counties, we have Family Counseling Center, mm-hmm. FCC. And they have been really diligent in tackling this substance misuse problem. Specifically, the FCC in Kennett is what I'm most familiar with. And they provide wraparound services to mothers or expectant mothers who have, you know, had a substance misuse issue at one point or another. And what they've been able to do so far within their grant cycle is they've been able to not physically deliver, but all of the babies delivered within their program have been live births, 100%, and then 100% of their births have also been drug-free. So what they're doing down in Kennett is working, and we want to definitely see how we can make that happen in different places. But to get back to your question a little bit, some of the other things that can happen, oftentimes if a mother tests positive for any sort of narcotics upon delivery, they will remove the infant from the home until they decide whether or not it's safe for reentry or some alternative. And so sometimes that is what happens, and we never want to see families torn apart. And so that kind of fuels us with this fire to figure out what the issue is and make sure that we're providing these resources to these parents.
Yeah, there's also a project called Project WIN that's also in Dunklin and Pemscott County. They target substance abuse and women who smoke as well, and they help them with housing and getting Medicaid and getting the help that they need.
So with all that going on, your organization has been, as we talked about earlier, been tasked with lowering the infant mortality rate, and I believe by, 15% in the next 10 years, mm-hmm. I believe. How has that been going so far?
Can I go back for a second to mm-hmm. the safe sleep? So on average, there's 4.6 babies per year that's died to unsafe sleep, and that's from 2009 to 2016. And so in those 8 years, there were a total of 127 babies that were born, or that died, sorry. And 37 of those were related to unsafe sleep. So that's actually 27%. in the last 8 years, and that's up by 3%, because in the 7 years, there was 24% of the deaths were unsafe sleep.
It's even more daunting when you look at the disparity, the racial disparity. And so from the data that we've been able to collect, what we found is that in 2016, of all of the infant deaths, 7 were white and 9 were black. Now, that doesn't sound like a huge disparity, but when you get into how many black babies were born, which is a significantly lesser number, and then you look at how many white babies were born, which is a significantly higher number, the disparity is huge. And so
there were 1602 births mm-hmm. in 2016. So 294 of those were black, and I believe 1224 were white babies.
Mm-hmm. So out of 294, 9 babies died. And then out of the 1224, 7 babies died. And so it's really time for us to look at this issue from a broader angle and attack not only, you know, the disparities, but look at all of the things, whether it be safe sleep, substance misuse, toxic stress, you know, all of the things that we know that contribute to these huge infant mortality rates, and really get down to doing some targeted action. And so with that, that's with this new information that we got, Talisha worked hard to collect all of this data. This data tells a story about what's happening. And so what we need to do is find a really good way to answer that story. And so we want to definitely I couldn't leave today without addressing that, the disparity thing.
Since you mentioned that, what makes a black child's death and a white child's death so different if they're in similar situations mm-hmm. of economic despair or impoverished areas mm-hmm. Within the region? What makes those deaths different?
Mm-hmm. So imagine that an infant is a flower or a rose. The thing that has an effect on the rose is the environment. So you have the sun, you have the soil, and you have the amount of water. The soil has been over time, we could look at the soil like the mother. So the soil over time has also endured whatever these different toxic stresses are. And it's different from person to person. But if you look at the broad spectrum, when we're talking about people of color in general within the United States, there is a certain amount of stress that is associated with just living, just getting day by day. And not saying that white folks don't have some of those stressors also, because they do, but not on the scale, the same scale that people of color do. And so if my mother was pregnant with me and she has endured this stress over time, that does, what we know about stress is that it does stuff to the body. We don't know. I can't, you know, quote exactly what, but a significant stress over time has an effect on your well-being. And so if the environment or the soil, which is mom, is not healthy or as healthy as could be, there's no way that flower is going to bloom when it's supposed to and as quickly as it should. And so that's the difference between a lot of the and this is on a large scale. I'm not, you know, talking about individual case by case. But that's the difference between the death of a white baby and a death of a black baby. And that's why you see these disparities. The numbers are clear.
And Talisha, you were going to add something earlier.
So you asked, how has this initiative helped? Mm-hmm. When I came on board, I didn't know infant mortality, first of all, was a word. I didn't know that when your baby died before the age of 1 was called infant mortality. Mm-hmm. So I had a baby that was born and he died 58 minutes later. In Talisha's world, that's my problem. That's not your problem. That's not anybody's problem. But as I've worked here, I've learned that it does affect everybody. Mm-hmm. And so we're missing those women that have lost babies and that would feel comfortable talking about losing a child, because those personal stories are important. And so if they're not on board, we can say all day, babies are dying, babies are dying. Mm-hmm. But if you've never experienced it, why do you think that's important to you?
Sorry. Well, no, that's an actual important aspect of it, you know, because you've been affected by this thing that you're working to solve already. That's our show. You can find this conversation on infant mortality and KRCU's story on the Baby Box Net program on our website at krcu.org, or find us on iTunes to hear this podcast. I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Join me every Friday night at 6 and Sundays at 3 for KRCU's Going Public.